Hi, everyone, and welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we'll be talking with Nikki Gauthier, who is an associate instructor in French and Haitian Creole in the Modern Languages Department. We're so happy that you could take time out of your busy schedule to join us today, and welcome.
Well, thank you, Dr. Torres, and I appreciate you inviting me, and I'm so glad
It's so nice to chat with you. I know that we've spoken just briefly in the hallway in the department a couple times, and I know that you're also working on your EdD in education with a focus in TESOL. And so I know how busy you are and how special it is that we got a chance to talk with you and feature you in this season of the podcast.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad to be here as well.
Great. I have so many things that I'm looking forward to talking to you about. But for our listeners who might not know you, might not have taken classes with you, could we start with a general question? Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe where you're from?
Of course. So you already said my name. I'm Nikki Gauthier. I am from Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I'm from Turgeau, Haiti. This is a region of Port-au-Prince. And I moved to the U.S. after high school. And I've been teaching here at UCF for about 9 years. That will be 10 years at the end of this year. So time goes by fast. And I started out teaching French, but a few years ago, we had submitted the proposal for our Haitian Creole courses to be started. So I'm now teaching both languages, and mostly elementary and intermediate French. And at this point, we're all only teaching elementary Creole classes with the hope that we'll soon be able to teach intermediate levels as well. So that's as a whole.
That's exciting. Yeah. So I imagine you mentioned you moved to the United States after high school. Where did you move initially here at the United States?
Right. That's a good question. So I initially moved to Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
Yeah, and I went to school in Brooklyn, New York. I went to a community college. It was a borough of Manhattan Community College in Brooklyn, New York. So sometimes when people ask me where I'm from, since I was in New York and studying from my teenage years sometimes, and this is where I did the most, I'm tempted to say that I was born and raised in Haiti, but I'm from both Haiti and New York. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd imagine that having, you know, those multiple facets of identity is something that helps you as a language teacher also. And I'd also imagine that the move to New York, of all cities, was a big contrast, I think. But for me, at least, New York feels really, really busy in comparison to just, you know, Orlando. How did you feel about the transition for you?
Well, for the first part of your comment, I would say, yes, it was different living in New York as compared to living in Haiti. However, it wasn't my first time being in New York, because I used to come on vacations ever since I was 10. Mm-hmm. So I was familiar with New York, and I had looked forward to moving to New York. Because when you live in the Caribbean, not only in the Caribbean, I think it's kind of global. Like a lot of, although I'm not going to say it's general, but it's a feeling that a lot of young people have, like going to the United States. So I had looked forward to moving to New York, but it wasn't all new to me because I was familiar with it. Okay. But the differences were, yeah, it's a big city as compared to Port-au-Prince. But at the same time, the living arrangements were different because I live in an apartment while in Haiti was in a house. So it was kind of the opposite, you know, on both sides.
Yeah, I can imagine that's quite a transition.
Big city, small place. I studied in Brooklyn, and I had majored in business at the time. And right after I graduated, I started working in the insurance field. Then I became a claims adjuster, an insurance adjuster, and I was pretty good at it. So I worked for a few well-known insurance companies. And after getting married and having my first child, I decided, like you were anticipating, that, well, New York is too much of a huge place. It's too busy for me to raise a child. I wanted to be in a more quiet region. So we decided to move to Connecticut. Hmm. After moving to Connecticut, I kept working as a claims adjuster, but in different roles. And since the company I worked for, they had a branch in Florida. We had gone to visit Tampa, and we totally fell in love with Tampa. Mm. And Connecticut was cold. New York was cold, but it was bearable. But Connecticut, to me, was kind of unbearable because it snowed. Not so much the weather, but because it snowed so much, and there was often ice on the road. So it's just a story. Like, I was driving one day, and my car overturned. Mm. I didn't get into any accident, but I told myself, I was like, okay, we have to move out of this area, or, you know, we don't know what could happen. So we decided to move to Tampa because we fell in love with Tampa. Mm. And then I could transfer. So that's what made it easier. So to get to the question, how did I get to UCF? It was the time when the economy was collapsing. Mm. And I had actually totally collapsed in 2009. So although I was excellent at the job I was doing, they had closed different departments because the economy, they had to make up for the loss they were having financially. So I wasn't spending enough time with my children. So I decided that I wanted to be in a different field. But ever since I was a child, I had always loved to teach because both of my parents were in the education field. My father had a school, like elementary school. I was raised knowing that my father was the owner of an elementary school, and my mother was a teacher at a public school. Mm. So my wish as a child was to be in the education field or to be in law school because my dad was also a lawyer. So I decided to resign from my position and to return to school because at the time I only had an associate's degree. So I needed to obtain the credentials so I could be able to teach. So that's how I returned to school. I went to USF, graduated there, and because I majored in French, and because I already had my background in French, because I speak both languages, French and Haitian Creole, one of my professors was like, why don't you consider doing a master's? You're still good at this. So I pursued a master's. And after pursuing the master's, there were a position at UCF, and one of my professors who totally liked me told me about it, and I applied for it, and here I am.
Yeah, it's funny how sometimes teaching comes to us in unexpected ways, and I can relate because there are many people in the extended family who studied and worked in the education field in Puerto Rico in my family, and my mother worked in elementary schools here as a paraprofessional. Education feels like a family trait.
Oh, really?
Sometimes, you know, I think you can relate since your parents are both in, in education.
Definitely.
And sometimes it finds us when we're not expecting it, right?
Yes, it does find us. Thinking about this, I'm thinking about the fact that I was able to know about the position as well because my professor kept in contact with the alumni.
Mm.
So that shows us the importance of interacting or being in contact or staying in contact with our alumni as well.
Yeah.
Or if you know about anything that's going on in a position that they might be interested in, we can forward the message to them. So.
Yeah. So folks listening, if you are alumni from our department, please contact us. We have an email. You can say, hey, you can let us know what you're up to. And if you want to be featured on this podcast, please let us know. We would be happy to, share, put that out there for our listeners to hear too. So you made it to UCF and you started teaching French. And what are some things that our listeners should know about the French program? And then we'll go into the Haitian Creole program, which I'm also really excited to talk about. But it seems like you started with French here.
I started with French. So the listeners should know that in our French department at UCF, we have several outstanding instructors. All of them are really outstanding. And even if you are set on having a specific major, if you are a lover of language and if you feel that you have the aptitude for learning French, I will encourage you to consider perhaps doing a minor or a major in French because currently French is an important language globally. So right after Spanish, if you speak French, you'll be able to, you have the possibility to work for many non-NGOs throughout the world. And this is the language that is recognized. So what our students should know is that we understand as instructors that learning a language is never something that's easy to everyone. So we use various teaching methodology depending on who you will have as an instructor in order to enable students to learn in an environment that where they feel safe to learn. And we also hold conversation sessions every other week, every semester. And if they feel that, well, we're learning, but where do I go to practice? So we thought of that. So you have the possibility to go every other week and to practice with one of our instructors here on campus who've been nice enough to conduct those sessions for many years. And if you want to be more involved, there's possibility for you to be involved with the French Honor Society and can learn about poetry, you can read some novels that will totally fascinate you. We'll learn about the culture at the elementary and intermediate level. So it's more than learning the grammar of the language. So we kind of want you to have a broad idea of what the language is about. We want you to fall in love with the language, and we want you to leave wanting to know more when you leave the class.
Yeah, when I work with my students, really in any subject, I always share a similar message, which is if I'm doing my job the way that I want my job to be done, then you should leave the class more curious than you were when you began. I would like you to continue to feel curiosity and joy and energy towards the subject, right? Even though some of it process can be challenging, but, you know, through challenge, we have growth. And hopefully, you know, when everything comes to the end of the semester, we continue to have more and more curiosity to lead us to the next part of learning that area, right?
Yeah. I've had students in my French classes, even students who are taking fully online classes, sometimes they'll learn about our French recipe, they'll cook it, they'll send a picture and say, well, this is what I cook. Or if it's an in-person class, if we speak about certain dishes that are consumed in different areas. So students, sometimes the experience, they want to go above and beyond to feel that they are experiencing the culture of the language. And then sometimes what may not come to students' mind at first is that when we hear French, we may think, well, French is spoken in France. That is true. This is the mother of the language. This is where the language initiated from. However, French is spoken in so many countries in Africa. Actually, Africa is where we find the most French speakers in the world. Mm. So French is not only spoken in Europe, and it's also spoken in some Caribbean island like Martinique, French Guyana, and Haiti, of course. And we already also know that it's spoken in Quebec, which is a region of Canada. So when we think of French, it's not only found in one region. The point is that you'll be able to use French if you learn it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I remember I was interviewing one of our Métis alumni who learned French specifically to be able to do the Peace Corps in Francophone Africa. And she talked about her journey through that process of language learning, but how it was such an aspect of motivation for her to be able to come in with some language. And then she also learned local language, because of course there's French and additional languages in Africa. But having that as a base was very helpful for her experience as well. So thank you for inspiring the listeners who might be considering the choosing of French. But it's not just French that you teach. And it was, you know, a few years ago, right, that you put the proposal in for Haitian Creole. Could you explain to our listeners the importance of Haitian Creole as an addition to the Modern Languages Department?
So Haitian Creole is very important as an addition for various reasons. And the first reason that I'm going to state is because there's a great need for Haitian Creole speakers here in the United States. And the reason is because Haitian Creole has become the third spoken language, along with French, in the past few years, because we have so many speakers. I mean, it comes right after Spanish. So if you speak the language, you'll be able to use it in many of the areas of STEM, especially after you graduate. So if you're a physician, for example, knowing Haitian Creole or some Haitian Creole, if you reside in the state of Florida or one of the major states like New York, Chicago, New Jersey, and so forth, then it's really an invaluable skill to have, because you'll be able to communicate with more patients. You'll be able to assist more individuals in your community that are in need, whether you are in the field of law or if you are in the medical field, doesn't have to be a physician, or if you have any position in offices and, you know, in constant customer service where you have to serve people, then Haitian Creole will be helpful. If you are in education, Haitian Creole is even more helpful, because we have many students who are bilingual who may need help. So if you understand their background, if you understand some Creole, that can totally help you. I know that probably is a long answer, but I've been receiving for the past few semesters, nearly every semester's messages from teachers from various states. In this past semester, I received 2 emails, and they want to be enrolled in our Haitian Creole courses because they advise that they have so many Haitian Creole students in their classes. They want to be able to assist them further. And I received messages from professors from Yale asking if I could help them find professors who teach Haitian Creole, because there's a need for them to find people who have knowledge of Haitian Creole to teach those who are in need. So it's really important. If you have that knowledge, it's going to be very useful to you.
Mm-hmm. I remember stories from my husband during his time studying in Nova Southeastern, so down in like the Fort Lauderdale area. And in the clinic where he was doing his rotations down there for optometry, they needed to know Haitian Creole. And there was only one person in his group that could translate. So when they had Haitian Creole speaking patients come in, they needed to wait for that person to come in. And he had done volunteer time in Haiti after the earthquakes many years ago. And so he had studied the language and participated long enough to get enough of the language to help in medical translation. But just that story really, I think, was helpful for me to understand the range of how many speakers of Haitian Creole there are in Florida. And folks who are interested in the proportions of different languages for our English as a second language students in the education field, there are data stories in the U.S. Department of Education that I'm happy to link in the description of this podcast so that you can see firsthand all the different languages that are spoken by students coming in through the educational system in the U.S. So
that's a great idea, Dr. Torres. I like that. Having the visual aid will certainly be important or useful. I was going to add, basing on what you just said, like the doctor's office needing more translators perhaps, but you only have one so far. I also received several messages from translations agencies, and not directly from doctor's offices, although I did receive a couple messages even from one of the major hospitals here in Florida, in Central Florida, in Orlando, asking if I had any students who would be willing to assist with translating for them, because when they had, during COVID and after COVID, they had such a shortage of nurses, and they started hiring nurses who did not speak English well from other countries. So although they were nurses, they couldn't communicate efficiently with some of the patients. So their intentions were, they were asking if we had some Haitian, some students who could speak or translate so that they could work alongside the nurses. And the agencies often ask if we have students who can help them translate for patients. So you are totally right about that.
Thank you for sharing that with the listeners. Again, there are things for you to do if you study Haitian Creole. There are many, many things for you to do, lots of applications of that language knowledge, and what a wonderful way to serve a community if you're helping folks to get the health care that they need through translation services. Lots of ways to do that. Nikki, I'm curious, because there might be some folks who are not as familiar with the concept of Creole languages. Is there any myth that you think is important for you to dispel, or to just, you know, share with us, correct that myth here on air in your episode?
Sure, of course. So some myths I can think of are that Creole is not a language, and it's a patois, it's a slang. So those are some myths, or that you won't be able to use it. I think that last one we've already addressed, so I'm just going to speak about the other ones, which are all similar in actually. So I will say that Creole is actually a language. It's not considered a patois or a slang. It's a language. It's a language because it has its own grammar. And the evidence is that it's being taught not only at UCF, but it's being taught around the United States in many universities as college credit courses. And so we have to understand what Creole is. What is Creole? Creole comes from what we call a pidgin language. So pidgin language is a language that is used when there are people from different regions who speak different languages. So it's used as a way for them to be able to communicate. So the pidgin language, for example, if I were to speak French and you speak Spanish, right? So we're not going to be able to communicate if we don't understand what we're saying. And if we add someone else who speaks perhaps Italian, then that makes it even worse. So in order for us to communicate, we start assigning a vocabulary word for everything that we're trying to express. So for example, I'll say, well, this is hair. And you, how do you say hair in Spanish, for example?
Pelo, cabello. Right. It depends on the variation, yeah.
Exactly. So we just use a word between how you call hair, pillow, and cabello, just is random. And we come up with a different vocabulary word. And the more that we communicate, the more new vocabulary words that we come up with. So those at the time will say that they are neologists, new words, words that are made up. And then it gets to a point where we have enough vocabulary to be able to communicate in the pidgin language. So a pidgin language is a language that is limited, doesn't have all the vocabulary. It doesn't have structure because it's something that is formative. You just use it in order to be able to communicate. But when it gets to the point where we have enough vocabulary to be able to understand each other, or we came up with enough vocabulary where we're able to have complete conversations and complete sentences. And then we start having structure, saying, okay, we should structure. This is the right way of saying it. So at that point, it becomes a Creole language. A Creole language is a language that is fully functional, meaning that you can express everything that you want to say, that you wish to say in a Creole language, where in a pidgin language, you can't because you're still trying to gather or come up with more vocabulary to express yourself. So when it gets to the point where it becomes a Creole language, then you also have rules. Well, the pidgin language does not necessarily have rules, especially at the beginning. And the pidgin language is only spoken by the generation that's there at the time, but it's not spoken by other generations. Well, the Creole language can be passed to other generations. So that would be the difference between the Creole language and the pidgin language. I know I said a lot, but in summary, the pidgin language is a language that is not fully functional. It's a language that is used just to be able to communicate, and there are that many rules or any set rules or specific rules. But then the Creole language has specific rules. It's fully functional. It can express everything that you need to.
Everyone, you heard it from Nikki Gauthier about the complexity of Creole and how it is a fully formed and expressive language that we should have equal respect to any other language. And thank you for sharing that with our listeners. I think sometimes folks get confused between pidgin and Creole, but it's good to clarify that with them. We talk about this a little bit in our sociolinguistics class. And see, everyone in sociolinguistics, really? You heard it from Nikki Gauthier. So so here we are. Great. And so you have different opportunities for students who are learning Haitian Creole to practice, even if they're not in your classes. And I just wanted you to have an opportunity to share what those sessions can be like for anyone who might be listening. And it's just curious to learn more about this language.
Yes, sure, of course. So generally, during the fall semester, we will hold two sessions, one that we call Chanté Creole, or it translates to sing Creole. This is where students, they meet and we meet together, and then we sing Haitian Creole songs. And the goal for those meetings for students to improve their reading skills. So it allows students to read in a fun way, and they're learning how to read the Creole without even realizing that they are. And it's fun. You're doing two things. Well, you learn about the culture as well, because those sessions, although I help when it comes to teaching students how to read the lyrics, but it's student-led. So I will assign, usually we'll have class, and I will assign a student to perform some research, and I'll tell them what genre that we're gonna sing that week, but they perform the research and they briefly explain what they had researched before we start singing. So for example, like if it's a week where they learn about troubadour, we know if you learn French, then you learn about the troubadour, but the troubadour is a bit different. So you learn about the Haitian troubadour and what musical instruments that they use. And then where those type of songs are usually sung. And it's very interesting. And students are usually fascinated when they come, and we all have fun singing. When it comes to the part where they have to read the lyrics, it gets turned over to me, since I'm more expert usually to be able to teach the group how to pronounce properly. And then once we get through that, then we all sing together, and sometimes we record them, and it's usually all fun. And those sessions are held generally during the fall semester. And in addition to that, we also hold Parler Créole, and those are conversation sessions, and they are all usually held every other week. And the Parler Créole is usually held during both semesters, the fall and the spring semester. And you don't have to be enrolled, just like Dr. Torres already reminded us. Like anyone who's a UCF student is able to join us and learn how to practice speaking Creole. And we use fun activities and sometimes games. So I try to vary what we do so that it's super fun for all of us. So we learn while having fun. And it's been successful for the past few years. I've had students who speak various languages, and students who are not enrolled in the courses who come and join us, and they usually are satisfied and pleased with the experience.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a wonderful way for someone to just get an introduction to Haitian Creole. Maybe if they hadn't thought about taking a class, or maybe they're a little hesitant, maybe they can start with the club activities and then progress into a class depending on their schedules. That's so nice of you to offer these opportunities to our students.
Thank you. And you are so right. I've had students who came to check it out. Like, I just want to know how it is. Or I've heard of Creole. I just wanted to experience it for a day. And a few of them had decided to join sometimes the class of next semester. So you are totally accurate about that. And yeah, that's a good way to test it out.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. Now, thinking about alumni, which I know that you are faculty in our department, but you do work with students, we all work with students and have experiences in helping students find their next step in their careers. Is there any memorable story that you would like to share with our listeners about either mentorship with a student that was particularly memorable, or a transition for a student into a job that you think our listeners would want to hear about?
Sure. So I'll tell you about the student who was in the French program. The first time I met her was during the summer session, and at the time we were teaching face-to-face, the summer session. And the student had expressed that she was in a different field and she wanted to become a French teacher. She also mentioned that she'll be happy if she could also become, she was like, I'd like to be a professor like you. All of our students here are intelligent. She was highly, highly focused, intelligent, diligent. So she pursued a French major here. She pursued a French major here at UCF. And after graduating, she wanted to take the same path I had taken. Because here at UCF, we offered a BA program in French, but we do not yet have a master's program. She met with me and I told her about how my master's program was at USF. And then she asked me if I could give her a reference letter. And of course I would, because she was an outstanding student, so I gave it to her, and then she was accepted in the program, and she was able to become that French teacher that she wanted to become. Mm-hmm. So after the program, she was offered a position, and she remained in the area and worked there, and we kept in contact for years after that. It's one of the experience that I can relate. Mm-hmm. And the second one it wasn't so much that I had led her to the next step as she got to, but I just thought it was, I just think it's a fascinating story, and she's an alumni, and we always are so pleased to hear that our students or students that we've had in our classroom are doing well and that they are achieving their life's goal. So I had a student in the first semester that I taught Creole. I had a student in my class who was a very brilliant student. And only last year, I was, because in my Creole 2 classes, sometimes I assign videos where students can hear the news, I mean, if they are not too fast, and so that they can practice their listening skills. And so I found this video on a news link on news site that I use, Haitian news site. So I had assigned it, and while I was writing the questions, that you have to listen as an instructor, if you assign a piece for students to listen to, you have to listen to it first and ask questions according to what's being said. And then I noticed, I'm like, I know that person. So it was an award ceremony that was being held. And a few students who were outstanding students were receiving a monetary award in law school. And I'm like, I know that student. She was my student the first year that our Creole program started. And I was so pleased. Mm-hmm. So although I did not keep in contact with her after she had graduated, I was so pleased that I was able to use her award ceremony to assign to my class. It's not that I knew it was her, I just happened to find that out. So that was one of the success stories that really, really made me happy.
That's so exciting. And what a small world moment too, right? To realize accidentally, wow, this is someone that I know. And I feel the same way. I mean, even though obviously our student successes are their own, right? But like, we still rejoice with them. We feel the vicarious joy whenever good things happen for them. We celebrate with them. We cheerlead for them. You know, all of that. I feel the same way whenever I get good news from my folks who are in contact with me.
And I have a last one, and this is a more recent student. Who was in contact with them while he was in the French program, because I generally teach elementary and intermediate level French. So oftentimes, you know, students will need additional help tutoring. And that student, while he was in his final year in the French program, had offered to teach students for free, to tutor students for free. And then I worked with him. He came up with a flyer, and then he met with me because he wanted to let me know about his plan. And I encouraged him to continue offering those to students. Because although we hold office hours, and we also always encourage students to contact us when they need additional help, but some of them might be shy. They might prefer to speak to other students. And sometimes when you have another student explaining things to you, it can share their tactics as a student, and that could be helpful. So then he held it. He held the sessions during the entire semester, but after he had graduated, he contacted me to let me know, well, I'm now admitted into a graduate program, still here at UCF, but I continued working with him, and he offered the same tutoring sessions for free for the elementary, for students who are in elementary French for an additional semester. So that was a collaboration that we very much appreciated, not just me, but as a department. And yeah, so that's what I have to share.
That sounds like a really wonderful and kind-hearted student that you got a chance to work with too.
Right.
Yeah. We have here one segment that we are going to call Ask Our Faculty. We have a correspondent, Miley, who has a question for you. Are you ready for Miley's question?
I am ready. Okay. Let's hear Miley's question.
Here we go.
As students take on learning a language, what are the benefits of pacing themselves?
Okay, so pacing themselves is very beneficial because when you're learning a language, you don't want to feel stressed out while learning it. And if you think of the fact that each language comes with a range of vocabulary words that you have to understand, and the grammar, although they could be or seem similar between a couple languages, but there are usually particularities having to do with the rules. So pacing, when students pace themselves when they learn, then that helps them to better grasp what they are learning. And also, when students have to deal with information overload, it's not helpful to them. Because when you try to learn too much at once, you can barely retain anything. So when you pace yourself and you learn, for example, if you have to show a video, because I try to show videos where they are only 5 minutes in length or 10 minutes in length instead of being an hour in length, because you remember more, you grasp more, you retain more when the information is not too much. So this is why for languages, I think that's an excellent question, because in languages, sometimes you may feel that, well, I can do this work, the semester's work in 2 weeks. No, it's not going to be helpful to you because you're going to feel stressed, and you're going to feel so stressed because you're not pacing yourself that you may not enjoy the experience of learning, and your goal of learning something, well, you're not going to be successful at learning. So instead of completing 30 exercises, you complete 6 to 8 perhaps, or do it daily, do 4 per day. And we ensure that you grasp that material and then you learn more and like this. And pacing yourself could also mean that you learn a little bit at the time and you try to practice it with someone in small doses. Mm-hmm. And like this, you'll ensure that you are retaining the information. Hopefully that answered the question. So yes, pacing is highly important because we don't want to overload our brain, because when our brain is overloaded, it doesn't retain much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about information overload and cognitive load in general and how we have, but it is important for us to give ourselves a break when we need them. Otherwise, we're spinning our wheels, and language is not something that you can cram, is what I hear you saying.
Yes. You can cram it. Mm-hmm. If you try to cram it, then you're not going to be successful at learning or at retaining the information.
Yeah. So
it becomes stressful, more stressful. And we want learning to be fun. We want to enjoy learning. Mm-hmm. And so this is why in my classrooms, for example, we try to have games. And it's not just myself who does this. Other instructors in our department, many instructors or most of them do the same thing. Like we try, if you learn, let's say vocabulary words or some grammar concept, we try to have you practice them by doing perhaps online games or games on the board, or give you small quizzes. Like I give sometimes mini quizzes to the students where they don't have that much to answer. Mm-hmm. And so like this, you ensure that they don't have to retain too much to be able to complete those assessments. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't become overwhelming to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you saying little by little, one thing at a time.
Little by little.
One thing at a time. We have one final question for you today, Nikki.
Sure.
And that is, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in studying French or Haitian Creole?
Well, the first advice is to enroll. Enroll in our courses. So if you're not sure, if you're thinking about French or Haitian Creole and you're not sure, you may start by joining some of our conversation sessions. For the French department, we call it Café Francophone. So it's a think about having coffee. It's a pleasant experience, right? So we give it this fun name. So you could join one of those sessions. And then if you don't want to participate, you could just observe and see how it is. And if you are interested in Haitian Creole, you may join one of our Parler Créole sessions and observe. But I prefer that you participate. But if you want to observe, that's fine. And then like this, you probably will decide to enroll in Creole One or French One. And that's the start of it. And I'm pretty sure, I'm confident that if you enroll, then you'll consider perhaps doing a second major or a major, because some students are enrolled here and they are not sure about what they want their major to be. Or it could be a minor. And so anything helps. And speaking any second language is helpful. It opens more horizon. It broadens your horizon. So the choice of enrolling in any language is a positive choice. But I'm biased to French and Creole, so I'll encourage you to enroll in Haitian Creole or in French.
Thank you very much for that. And everyone, you heard it, the advice. Go ahead and start. Go ahead and start. You got to start somewhere. So great. We're so happy that you could join us today, Nikki. Merci beaucoup. And
yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Torres. I was so pleased to have that discussion with you. Yeah, and I thank you for having this podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to DaVideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Nikki Gauthier. Tune in next time to hear more stories from modern languages. For more information about French, Haitian Creole, and other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.